It was far more popular, but...
Shall I switch it on now so you know
yes,
it's on?
Right.
Could you tell me how you ever came to do the survey in the first place?
I can't remember what put it into my head at all. I was getting very much interested in social questions. Then, again, in a immature way, most people were, of my contemporaries were getting very much interested in social problems in those years, the first 10 years of the last century, And I was interested in the economic side. I'd enjoyed the social, what we'd call social history sites of history school, doing history schools, and I'd enjoyed tackling social problems, partly with my near uncle, Francis Edwards, there doing the economics diploma, which had just lately been invented at that period there. Yeah, Mrs. Fisher was what I've seen her. I'm not quite sure whether she suggested it. Oh, no, well, she may have. She, Mrs. Fisher, H.A.L. Fisher's.
Yes.
Daughter,
yes.
And
I'll make a note of that.
Mother of Mrs. Bennett, principal of St. Hilda's. Yeah, Mrs. Fisher taught me my earliest economics and helped me to be very much interested in social problems.
Yes.
It was that period, you know, just stop me if I've been gathered as once.
No, please carry on.
It was that period, just the beginning of the century, 1900 to 1905 or 6, that just after the social war, that Oxford made great steps ahead in voluntary social service, and particularly, you know, the three ladies who just got first classes, Mrs. Pritchard and Mrs. Fisher and dear Mrs. Wells, all of them, first classes, and two history, and Mrs. Pritchard, a great philosophy particularly. And they set forth, they founded an organization, and they set forth on tackling infant welfare particularly. We were one of the earliest places to do researches about practical work in helping mothers how to bring up their babies in the poor parts of Oxford. It was a very interesting connection, statutory and voluntary connection.
Yes.
We led the way. I always say we, because I was allowed, I was rather younger, but I was allowed to come in as privilege and rule their notebooks, that kind of thing. But I'd got very much interested altogether with that, partly over in connection with housing and partly in connection with babies. Yeah. Well, there was a great deal of thought of all that kind of thing going on immediately around. And of course I had been in all those. The university had a lot of, there was a lot of it, of course, growing a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, Canon Scott Holland.
Yes.
Yes. Know about him.
Oh, yes. Yes. He was actually quite in favour of women's suffrage too, wasn't he? He was one of the few Anglicans.
He was one of the people who helped to found the Christian Social Union.
Yes, yes.
You can turn your wire off for a moment.
I will.
And do a little story. Well, he ends up, you see, with Father Dolly, but the Moberly one was not there.
Yes, I'll make a note, Moberly. Because one thing you could do, Miss Butler, as well as tell me your own recollections, is to tell me things I ought to read, you know, to understand the survey and how you ever came to write it, you know, and that would help, I'm sure.
Well, you could just browse if you wanted to. I think you'll find the last two things rather helpful.
Yes.
As a background.
Yes, well, I'll certainly look at that. Did you have any connection with the Carlyles, A.J. Carlyle?
Oh, yes. I think whether he talked to me beforehand about doing the study of Oxford. He was great on Christian Social Union, and he'd got connected a gathering who made inquiries into children about 1906 about children's work in Oxford, street trading and that kind of thing, which he handed over to me there, largely denouncing it. I mean, there was much too much of it there. Well, the whole set of people who were so interested, Aerosmith, I mean,
I'll look up that thing on children in Oxford anyway.
It wasn't ever printed. I've got it somewhere. Nuffield Connections. I've been meaning I ought to do something about it.
Do you think I could borrow it from you?
If I can even find it, yes. Right.
That would be very helpful. I'd like to see that.
There were a number of organisations going on. There was a curious thing called the Council for Industrial Advancement of Young People in Oxford, which was founded about the year 1906 there, again, University of Wallace, there, to try to help boys and girls to get some industrial training, which was much too little. There was always too many even boys type for work for that period there. I used to be its secretary about the time when I was collecting stuff for the history there. Mm-hmm. The little Oxford book there. I learned a lot from it.
So there's quite a lot going on, of interest in social problems.
Quite a lot going on altogether.
Mm. Yeah. But why should it be a young girl doing this? I mean, isn't it an unusual thing for young?
I think it was. Well, I know my father was rather doubtful about it, but still, you see, I don't quite know why. I'm pretty sure that Dr. Carlyle helped us, and Mrs. Fisher, I think probably it was those two. I'd had a lot to do with them, with Dr. Carlyle, over different things.
Sorry.
There were a good many, of course. There was rather an outbreak of books of that kind of studies. I mean, like other people, I'd be very much interested in Booth's London just before that. I think I got specially enthused by Rowntree's book about York. I forget why, but I did somehow.
It's a very good book, actually. The poverty book,
very good book indeed. Yeah. Mm.
Yes, you can't remember why it excited you, but it just did, didn't it?
I think so.
Yes. It's one of the first social surveys to try and get an objective standard of poverty. I mean, a dietary. It's one of the first surveys to try and define poverty objectively, so to speak.
Poverty.
Yes,
right. Oh, very good book.
It's interesting.
Two or three other local things. Was it Miss Jupp? Dr. Eglantine. Somebody did one about Cambridge.
Yes, I think there is. Did you read that actually before?
Not
you?
Not before. I think it was after.
Yes.
And there was one a little after, I think, about Norwich. I got them at home somewhere.
Yes, there were several local studies.
Quite a little later.
Yes.
Before the First World War.
Yes. I'll look up those because it would be interesting to set it. Did you ever read? Did you read Booth?
Oh yes, quite a lot of Booth and Pestalozzi. I think probably that suggested it very much.
Because there are 17 volumes.
not the whole, quite. It's an admirable summary. Final volume, I mean.
Yes.
And I think one doubt about importance of one knew.
Yes. I thought clearly there's a lot going on intellectually at this time in the whole area of social studies, social surveys and so on.
Yes.
And I suppose naturally an intelligent girl would pick this up and read about it. But what is surprising is that you should have gone on to do a survey yourself. That's what surprised me.
I mean, various people, I put them in my purses, helped me with contacts.
Mm. Yes. Who helped you actually?
I've got
the book here. Yes, I think I remember you.
You say.
Yes, my thanks are due to Mrs. H. A. L. Fisher, Dr. A. J. Carlyle for much help and advice. What sort of help and advice did they give? Do you remember actually?
Chiefly in lending me papers, such as his thing about children. Do you see that thing about the child investigation? And I think he probably gave me introductions to the trade unionists that I quoted there. They had. I mean, Dr. Carlyle was felt to be a rather dangerously liberal at that time there by the Orthodox, and he was one of the dons who did make friends with noble trade unions, which weren't, of course, at all strong at that period. It's a very different world.
Yes, I remember you saying at one point that the friendly societies were much more important than the trade unions in Oxford at that
time.
Yes,
I was quite wrong in saying that.
But it's interesting.
In many ways they were.
But could I ask you, Ms. Butler, a bit, I ought to know more about your upbringing, your education and so on. I'm not quite sure, you know, what the history of your education is. I mean, to get me to the point where you do the survey, do you see what I mean?
Well, not very interesting. I didn't, a very short time of schooling, at school as such, owing to my older sister, who's been so very energetic on and off all her life. She was a delicate child when she was small, so, and it was three sisters, it was my brother, who was very clever. Dragon Ball and New College and so on afterwards, and a professor, but there were three sisters, and it really seemed so much simpler to my parents to have a governess as who would just do and deal with the three sisters. So we had a nice little governess called Miss Holiday, and went on with her. I went on until I was 14 or 15. I think really we got more education from our parents, incidentally, who were both very intelligent and very kind, good there. And then I went for a couple of years to Wickham Abbey, and then came home, and then was all bored for a year. And my sister had already begun to read history at Lady Margaret Hall, which was 2 minutes away from where we lived in Alvin Gardens. And my father had been on its council for years, of course. Yeah. And so I followed suit in a very ambitious way. Read history too, with great pleasure. I was greatly enthused on the bit of economics that there was in the history school. There was a bit of economic, there was some economic theory and economic history. Only one paper, I think, still. It was there, like that part particularly. Still showed this, the young she isn't on, is it?
It is on, that's what was she? I mean,
she was. She was young. She and Mr. Fisher. He was a very good history don at New College that period.
Yes.
And well, there she was, very nice and very attractive, much like by great many people.
Yes. She's still alive, isn't she?
Mrs. Bennett, although she died quite a time ago.
Oh, did she?
And Mrs. Bennett appeared rather late in life, there, 6 or 7 years after their marriage. And that intervening period, Mrs. Fisher filled up with the immense variety of things. Much loved by people.
Yes, yeah. I wish I
particularly good. Actually, the other two ladies, Mrs. Fitchard and Mrs. Wells, were all the better with the babies than she was. And she was very good at organising things and making friends. And
yes. So you did history school. Did you got a first, did you?
Yes.
Did you really? Yes, yes. And
then I went on, after being on the board with odds and ends of things, I did the economics diploma. Yeah, I mean, did I follow well? I was almost the first one who would have been allowed to do it, so the standard wasn't, no doubt, very high. I got very much interested in that. I did it for myself. Sydney Ball gave me advice about socialists, and about special ed, and about the poor. Half our friends seemed to be on the poor law guardians. So by turns I asked them about another. I read two nice little special subjects of myself quite quietly and heavily.
Did you get encouragement from Sydney Ball, actually, with your survey?
Well, I had before. Again, he was an old pupil of my father's. They were great. They were very good friends. But I did then and before.
Because he was a major figure in Oxford, wasn't
very
he?
Much, yes. Again, rather dangerous Fabian.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, he appears now rather timid. And
so much, yes. Right.
Yes, it's interesting. Yes. So you got your first at LMH in history.
Well, no, it was over students.
Oh, yes, yes, I see, yes. Yes, I see.
I was basically made in any age, largely.
Yes.
Because it was just down the road, and Miss Lodge was a very good tutor in Pierre-Vienne.
So this was the sort of origins of St Anne's, really, was it? I mean, the early stages. So this was what was the home students?
The Society of Oxford Home Students.
I see. So was it a college at that time? I'm afraid I'm ignorant about
it. It wasn't called a college then. It was started, well, my sister's written a history of it. You wanted, but you wouldn't. There.
I would like to, actually. I mean, by Ruth Butler.
Hmm.
I'll have a look at that. History of St Anne's. See, my wife went to St Anne's.
Really, they all began at the same time, you see.
Yes.
Actually, the home students was just a shade before Lady Morgan and the other. They were all at the same time, and the all four women who were the first principals. So they were all very good friends. It was full scale, of course, colleges. I mean, 40 to 60, that kind of thing, don't you know, that period.
Yes. But was it? It was like a college, was it? I mean,
yes, it was quite like a college.
You were in residence.
We did. They weren't all. The whole students weren't all residents. It was founded clearly. It was exactly like a college. But they were mostly the daughters of dons.
Yes.
It was a period. The marriage rules of dons. Just far enough back for the other crop of daughters wanting to do some intelligent work.
I see, yes, yes, yes. So, anyway, you had as your tutors Mrs. Fisher for your economic history paper. What other tutors did you have who impressed you in the course?
Well, I did economics later with Professor Edgeworth. Who was?
For your diploma,
one of
you mean?
One of the Edgeworths. His father isn't there, but he was the first cousin there. And he behaved rather like an uncle. It was, of course, my kind of economics that I was getting interested in was totally wrong from his point of view. He was founding mathematical economics.
I see, And you were interested in the sort of social sociology
side. I liked applications, but he was very kind to me.
Yes. That was when you were doing the diploma, was it?
Yes.
What was this diploma, actually, Miss Butler? Because it doesn't now exist.
It changed its name, didn't it? It was for years, before modern grades began.
Yes.
It was the only organised way of doing economics and politics. It was a diploma. Later, it became a diploma in economics and politics.
It's not like the social studies diploma, is it?
Yes, it is.
It's the origins of that, is it? I see.
It's the origin. There were two social studies diplomas.
That's right.
One that was allowed to survive and for the benefit of Ruskin largely, and the social, the Dr. Hersey's one, and the Barnett House one.
Yes.
And they grew out of that more or less.
Yes, I see. So it was a 1 year thing that you did after your degree, was it?
Yes. Do it in 1 year or 2 years as you liked, I think, in that period. Yeah.
Yes. Were there any other tutors, apart from the economics tutors, who struck you as helpful or inspiring or stimulating?
Dear Miss Lodge was very nice, a good teacher. She was a sister of Sergeant Lodge, of the Lodges there. She was later principal of Westfield.
But Mrs. Fisher...
No, nobody went on, but not very long, really, altogether, was it? The economics diploma I did largely. Myself, the other, dear Mr. Armstrong, there was a Mr. Armstrong who for many years ought to have been president, what is he, Provost of Queens.
Oh, yes.
He was Provost of Queens finally.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a specialist in foreign history and had most faithful following of young women, but others. He was very kind, and he taught us. Made us very keen about Italian history.
Yes.
Very good teacher.
I noticed the quotation in Italian at the beginning of your book.
I'm rather proud. I'm not at all proud of the book. Not at all. But I'm rather proud of inventing that quotation. I find it difficult to find it now, but it comes in Dante, as you know.
Yeah.
It comes. They turn to open. I think in the... Yes, I think it was some of the people in the Inferno who turned upon him as he was going round the nether regions, turned upon him and said bitterly, "Oh, you ask about our conditions."
That's interesting, yes. That's very interesting. I mean, your memory is marvellous. I mean, you're really producing all sorts of valuable things.
It is very odd how memory works.
Well, really.
My sister's much more remarkable about remembering old things, the oldest things, than I am. I've washed out a good many. Not deliberately, because they've gone, but she keeps them.
Yes. You actually, I mean, it's quite clear that you are very interested in history in the whole survey. I mean, there are a lot of historical passages.
Yes, too much. I think I did it partly just because I was so interested, but I did want to help it. I hope that it would be a background, you see, to some of the people, particularly some of the younger people who are coming on parallel with me, or a little more older, and were wanting to do good work in Oxford. I think it was really that, largely, there. This mustn't be quoted, but its style was largely prompted secretly in my mind by a very keen, typically Irish young woman who lived next door to me in a large, comfortable house in the Hoffman Gardens. We were very good friends over many things. She turned on me once and said, "Miss Butler, you know that when I read a book, if I turn over a page and I see figures in it, I always go on to the next page." So I kept her, she haunted me.
So you want
for her benefit, so to speak.
So you wanted to make it readable as well.
Yes, it's all really. I wanted to make it readable, or possibly useful. That was all.
Yes, well, it certainly both.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very immature piece of work. That's all about it. But I enjoyed the history part of it, and the other parts, of course, I'm really rather ashamed of it's been. It is patronizing, but we were all harmlessly class conscious 60 odd years ago. I mean, we were much more classes.
Yes, I mean, it's inevitable. I mean, you can't...
So that's it. I mean, if I do look at it, I've looked at it lately, but I've had to work on me to remember, and I felt ashamed of some of the fervently patronising remarks there in it, tell you. Yeah.
Well, at least you were trying to do something about these conditions instead of merely sitting down under them, weren't you? I mean, I wouldn't think there's anything to be ashamed of at all.
It seems impossible to be able to... Now, one of the last people who ever spoke to me about the little old book was, or that is, a very good communist who works now in a garage because people didn't like his communism in big factories. And he was has been the chairman and is now the great supporter of the Rose Hill Community Centre, which I've been deeply attached to its foundation in the 30s there. And he turned upon me at one of their committees one time and said, "Miss Butler, I've been reading your book. And what I'm really surprised at is that you say that people could live upon three shillings a week for food." Well, that's it. I thought he would never talk to me again after that. I hope we've been quite good friends. He doesn't bring his communism forward now. But you see, it was rather a very shocking book, not at all meant for an up-to-date communist.
Yes, well, I agree. I mean, you've got to allow for the period in which it was done. Yes. The First World War messed things up a bit, didn't it?
Oh, such a difference.
For you, I mean...
So much difference, yes.
Yes, I mean...
And of course, so much difference for Oxford, I mean, so much difference with Morris coming on the works.
Yes, of course, all your book is pre-Morris, isn't it? But these people who you were creating a framework for with your book, or helping, presumably a lot of them dispersed for other duties in the war, and it never really...
Yes, all of them had to do other things.
Yes. What do you think about your book... In retrospect, I mean, did it achieve what you wanted it to achieve?
No. don't think so. I don't know, Stella. No. He did help some people who wouldn't have been very much interested to be a little more interested. I think that's all I can say.
I mean, the war really did interfere with the process of creating group of people, didn't it?
Yes.
Who were interested. It's really a shame.
And I mean, after the war, there were so many, obviously, pressing needs after the war that they didn't need a little book to tell them about it.
Was it referred to very much by people? I mean, did you see it referred to, you know, shortly
it
after?
It was a bit, I think. I think within, and just after, just, people did read it a little, well, quite interested. I got to put away a bundle of the usual kind of polite remarks in the 1912 and 1913. It was only, you see, just a couple of years before the war, First World War. Anyway, I think it did help to make people interested.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
it did,
after that, there were so many other things to make them, to force them into interest.
Of course, yes. Would you allow me to look at the comments that were made in 1912? That really would be a help.
Yes, I'm not sure that I've got them, but I think they're in a drawer at home.
Are they? I mean, that would be a great help if you could sort of hunt them out.
If they were worthwhile.
I'd like to know where the reviews of it are. You see, it must have been reviewed somewhere.
There was one very polite review in the Morning Post.
Morning Post.
There.
I'll look that up.
I don't think there were any others particularly. There was quite a crushing one in the Economic Journal. I always thought Cousin Francis Edgeworth might have done better by me than that. Somebody who didn't like me, I didn't like it. I forget who she was. There weren't a great many reviews, but there were some quite nice reviews.
Because if I write about it, I'd rather like to look at what people thought about it at the time, you know.
Yes, quite.
If that's all right.
It didn't have a wide circulation. It's a paid its way, don't you know, with the paperbacks selling off. In fact, Sidgwick didn't suffer peculiarly.
Could you tell me about its publishing history? I mean, it started off as a hardback.
Yes. Quite in a year, it was sold off as a paperback simply.
Yes, I see. Do you remember how many copies?
No, I never knew at all.
I'm afraid I don't know that about my book either.
Not a great many, I don't think. But he didn't. I mean, he was quite happy about it. I think he felt that he hadn't. They lived on the corner. Sidgwick and Jackson.
Tell me about the Sidgwick.
We all were good friends.
In North Oxford?
Yes, just round the corner. So to speak. Which was Arthur Sidgwick? What college was he?
Well, there was a Sidgwick at Corpus, I don't know.
Is it? Wasn't he at Corpus? I think he was.
I think he probably was, yes. Yes.
Beautiful beard.
What was he keen on publishing books about social conditions?
Not particularly. I think, look, I've got the back paper. I've got my paperback. He probably took it. He made no fuss about it. I mean, I had a very easy time about it altogether. I just put the thing together. And various people who I mentioned there did read some chapters there and criticised them while putting my thesis. And then I just wrote to them. Thanks, Sidgwick, because as I say, we always, his sisters were friends, both of his father, we were all friends. I said, would he publish me? And he just did it. Yeah. He didn't pay me anything, but he didn't, I didn't want him to. I was quite contented, I didn't have to pay anything myself. Yeah.
So you took it to him because he was a publisher you knew, really, not because he was looking for books of this sort?
Not particularly. He had various odds and ends, as you see on his back page there.
Yes.
Those were anthologies. I really don't know what he was doing. He was not very developed as a publisher then, but he did develop into a lot of other things.
Yes, yes. So anyway, the paperback came out in 1913 or 1912, was it?
Twelve, I think they both came. I think.
Yes.
I think it was the first one. The one was 12, and I think the next year he just sold it off.
Yes. I wonder whether, in fact,
the opposite.
my edition is a bound up one of the paperback. It may be. Do you think? I mean, it's not the original bound binding, is it? It's been rebound.
This she was a woman, but she might have been equally. She was one of the daughters of the comfortably off, retired civil servant. We see her father was a. Had been out in India and was a judge, I think he was, Sir Arthur, there. And they lived in London, and she lived a quiet life and went round and did all she possibly could in the way of my obvious social work, like saving, helping people with their savings and that kind of thing. A very nice, sensible, practical person there. And she talked the talk, we were very good friends, she was older than me there. And said she had enjoyed that kind of thing, and I think a certain number of people of that kind do, you know, that kind of thing. Social work as a form of paying your rent. Do you see? I think a lot of my contemporaries felt it was that. We knew we were comfortably off, and we felt quite guilty when we thought about the really poor. But as individuals, we couldn't do anything except doing the individual small things like helping to apprentice the boys who left school and doing collections and probably teaching them Sunday schools also there, just as a piece of, perfectly obvious and not at all proclaimed the first about in the world, yet it's an obvious piece of duty. And also been very interesting.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Interesting to ourselves, I bet.
Yes, yes.
A mixture of both those things.
Yes, yes. That's very interesting. So, you've done your diploma, your one-year diploma in economics. Mm. Did you then start on that straight away?
No, not straight away. I did so in a teaching diploma. You didn't mention that. I got it in one term, but that was in London University. And I decided I'd been educated quite long enough and I wasn't going to do any more of it. There weren't billets and such things then. They were just beginning to be thought of and much despised by most of us then.
So you were thinking of being a school teacher, were you, at one time?
No, I was quite decided I wasn't going to be a school teacher. I never wanted to, but I was interested in it. And I thought I might be a school inspector or something of that kind. Or deal with older people. That's all, yeah.
So you did your economics diploma, then your school
one
teaching
term.
Thing in one term, and then what happened?
Oh, then I went and did some practical work, which interested me very much for a few months, for the Women's Industrial Council, which was a very good body. Much led by Mrs. Ramsay MacDonald, people of that of the intelligent labour people there, and I forget, they published a paper that I had fallen in with and was not interested in about social conditions. They said they wanted somebody to come and do some investigation, and I spent some time going round to factories and workplaces with a schedule of questions about wages they gave to their people.
That was before you did the survey?
Yes, I got very much interested in that, and I stayed in the Lady Margaret Hall settlement and did work for apprenticing boys and girls at that period, quite a lot. And
that's interesting.
I've abused their connections, which you didn't, again, you can quote about my early investigations, of going immediately to one of the large wig makers and asking, beginning with the scheduled questions I was asked to give, a very fashionable one. He looked at me with horror and said, "Would I please go away and not come back?" He didn't like that kind of question.
That's interesting. Do you remember any opposition, actually, of that sort when you were doing your survey in Oxford?
No opposition. They all seemed quite pleased.
Mm. And you've got...
questions. I don't remember anybody refusing at all. I've got some. I have a good many notes of the things I got from the factory people.
Have you really? Yes.
The thing I, the trade union people. I rather like the story, my story about the trade union that used to meet in Vinci Lane on Sunday mornings, because the former had been met before there. Obviously, it was 1820 something, wasn't it? The act that
1825 or 4.
25, it was before that, just for his church met before that. Yeah. So they couldn't have public meetings, so they went. There's a particular corner of Vinci Lane that I always associate with that Sunday mornings.
Yes, yes. 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 So anyway, I'd rather like to find this pamphlet, actually, the Women's Industrial Council pamphlet you helped, and you helped actually write it. Have you really?
Yes.
And if I looked under your name, would I find it, or would I? How would I find it in the catalogues?
There is a big catalogue of old. Not of the sort, but of their magazine. What was it called? I've got a copy of it. I've got to spend that whole sorting out the accumulations in my Melbourne Road house, and there are a good many of them somewhere there still. But we used to have some of them in the old Barnet House library, but I rather think that modern influences have got rid of those.
But it was published as a separate pamphlet, was it? Not in a journal or in a...
Not the things that I found out. I forget what they did. Oh, wait a moment. The thing about domestic service.
Oh, yes.
They were responsible for it.
Were they? Yes.
That was it. They did quite a lot of other investigations, do you see, about more difficult trades. I remember going out to some of their... They were Polish, but then that period, Polish tailors, different immigrants, people who were refugees for Russia and so on, there, who were working under very hard conditions. Maybe Mr. McDonald used to come and talk to us at our meetings at intervals there, and his wife there. Yeah.
What did it seek to do, the Women's Industrial Council, really?
Really to educate opinion, you see, very definitely, and to get information. They did a lot of getting information as a background, and they'd got little information bureau to some extent for the beginning early Labour MPs.
It was almost a sort of research thing, really, in a way, was it? I mean,
it was meant to be research with a definite objective.
But were the working women involved, or was it really upper class women or middle class women like yourself who were running it and managing it?
I'm not quite sure whether they came in or not. They were very good friends with them. Again, you could be friends without being around there. Working women, if you go back to about 1906 and 7, you see, weren't doing much, were they, in the way of thinking they were expected to run things. They were beginning to cooperate with the upper classes there, and then they thankfully emancipated themselves, as we all know later on, from upper class influence. If I want to say the only picture I've got of Mrs. McDonald speaking. I don't think I ever heard him speak later in life, not as a premier or anything there. But he's coming, looking very nice and impressive, and talking to a large drawing room meeting of ladies in bonnets about the needs of working women, which he did very well indeed. They were, I've done it with the bonnets or without the bonnets. I think we were all very much interested.
I think he'd be rather good with middle-class ladies, actually. A rather romantic figure anyway, isn't he? And attractive and so on. But so you went to London, actually, to the LMH settlement in the course of this work. Yes. And you did your booklet on domestic service in 1911, didn't you? I think I'm right in saying.
Yes.
Wasn't that the date of that?
Or was it 11 or 12? No, but I think it was a little later.
Was it?
I think it got delayed. It wasn't published. I think I got too much interested in doing some other things. I treated them rather badly. And there, and after all, they did all the work of collecting the material. I only digested it. And it didn't get published just at the beginning of the war.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I mixed up the timing.
It wasn't. I know they felt they were forgiving kindly, but they felt I had treated them badly over the later stages. So they did.
But so, in fact, your Social Conditions book was your first book. Was it, or the first thing you published, was it? Or had you published articles before?
No, I don't think so. I did one or two articles. I forget if they were before or after. Or the Economics Review, those, not the journal, but the Economics Review, or several things of that kind.
Were there? Because I'll look those up. And
you know, very interesting things about forlorns on.
Yes, well, that would be interesting. And I'll look them up and so that you think they were before the book came out, so the book. So I don't know where the LMH settlement is, or was, I ought to know. Whereabouts?
Lambeth. Yes.
You didn't ever meet Kathleen Courtney, did you?
What?
You never met Kathleen Courtney, did you?
No, I ought to. I know her name so well. Why do I know her name?
Well, she was at the settlement, you see.
Yes.
A little earlier, I think, than you.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed her about 2 or 3 months ago. She's now 97. And she went down from university. I think she was at LMH, that's right, herself.
Yes, I see.
And she went down from university to the settlement in Lambeth, and that started her off in social work.
That would be it, I think. I think I must know her name from my sister, my eldest sister, no longer in this world. There, she was warden of the LMH settlement, quite.
I wasn't
working there on her term, I think, but she was warden.
Was she?
It all rather well in the family.
Did your sister also go along to the LMH settlement with you? I mean, or no, were you the only man?
No, the sister we met just now, she went. No, she didn't. Yes, Olive went to the settlement a long time. She was there for about 20 years, the one who died 2 or 3 years ago.
Was she? Yeah. And she was there
she
before
was
you?
She was for a long time. Yeah. Much devoted, and very good warden. Not very theoretical, but very good. In fact, it made them all very happy.
Did she go there before you then, or after you?
Am I getting my dates right? I think she went there before, yes. Yes.
Did she? Yes. So it was quite easy for you to go down there? And
yes. I just lodged there and worked there.
Yes.
Yes.
And your work consisted in getting information, really, on social conditions, did it?
Yes, and helping girls and boys clubs and anything else that could be thrown in the evenings.
Yes. So then you did that, and then did you come back to Oxford after that? Or
yes,
what?
Then I came back, and then there was a period there when I couldn't do things, various reasons. But then I became secretary to this absurdly named Council for Industrial Advancement of Young People in Oxford. And went on asking, they put a whole quantity of them asking Oxford employers, rather bored, about openings for boys as apprentices. Girls were simpler because they had to go, they either became dressmakers or went to service at that period. There. Denston.
That's a major theme in your book, actually, apprentices and jobs, isn't
yes.
it? I mean, you're obviously very interested
yes.
in that.
Yes.
So, in a way, the book grew out of that, I suppose, did it?
Well, it grew out of that partly, and out of the housing things, because there was also... As soon as I'd finished doing my history schools, I think, just... Yes, I remember... I told Mrs. Fisher, the term after, this isn't for reproduction, but I told Mrs. Fisher I was very bored with life, what should I do next? And she said, so, with a good help with housing, because we started doing housing before now, Octavia Hill, that kind of thing there. And I still have to do with it. It's gone on, it's turned itself into, it was the old Cottage Improvement Society, and it was starting on Octavia Hill principles in that period after 20 or 30 years of life of having women collectors and voluntary workers who would do the social side and look after the ordinary affairs and things there. And that way I did that for untold years, just as a part-time thing there. Learned a lot by doing it. It turned, you know, in the last 10 years or 15 years into the Oxford Citizens Housing Society. Keeps the old name.
So
had a big grand, I went down to a grand opening the other day of, with many distinguished persons present, of new model flats that they put up in Iffley.
Oh yeah, so they're still quite active.
Changed, I mean, completely, no longer doing little, mending up little old cottages for the poor.
Yes.
But because so far they haven't been destroyed, which they largely have been, City does that quite well now, but it didn't that one.
Yes. So in a way, I mean, people collecting rents were almost social investigators
helpers.
I mean, Octavia Hill's principle is to involve yourself in the whole life of the family, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we did do that, and we helped them.
So that the distinction between social investigation and rent collecting, which now is complete, wasn't really...
No, not at all. No, I think the thing was that nowadays the researchers would despise doing the practical things, the applications. But the early research, certainly so far as women were concerned, and a good deal so far as men, which was rather different than position. But the early research was very closely linked to applications, and that's it.
Yes, that's a very interesting contrast, isn't it, really? I mean, the social investigation grew out of practical activity, really, and it isn't a purely academic thing, ivory tower thing at all, really. I mean, it simply is related to practical needs.
Yes.
And day-to-day problems. Yes, that's very interesting.
I think that would have been the same. It was the same very much, I think, with the Lovelace York, very much, I think.
Yes.
I mean, he was naturally hoping for having a wider sphere, but I think he meant it the same kind of thing.
Mm. You never actually met Octavia Hill, did you? You could have done, couldn't you?
I met her. I wish I had.
You could have met her,
could
she?
I could quite well, yes.
Yes. Because I was talking to Mary Stocks, you know, Lady Stocks, the other day about her suffrage thing, and she met Octavia Hill.
Yes, I might have. I can't think why I never did. Yes.
Did you admire her? I mean, was she a figure you admired at that time?
Oh, yes. Octavia Hill, oh, very much so. Yes, very much. Very much. And she wrote such very good and sensible things, and she was interested in things, wasn't she? Like, wasn't she one of the people who helped us start the National Trust?
Oh, yes.
Wasn't she? Yes.
But, you see, again, that's puzzling, because she's not a fashionable figure now, Octavia Hill. People look down on her because she's, I suppose, patronising in her attitude to the poor, perhaps, or certainly highly moralistic in her attitude to poverty.
Yes, I know. They despise it so much, but it's so foolish of them.
Yes.
I don't believe people felt her. I don't believe that the people she worked with felt her patronising a bit.
Mm.
I mean, they were very poor and very unwashed and so on. The ones mainly that she was aiming at, the really very poor ones, and they needed a lot of help. I mean, they did really needed to get up a step higher. I mean, in civilization.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. I mean, I'm rather critical of the criticisms made of Octavia Hill, because in her way, she made a great contribution to social investigation and to the finding out about poverty and so on.
I mean, she was quite a sensible person who knew that that you need to find out, know something about your problem before you begin to solve it. I mean, as you said, there, whether it's individual or not.
I entirely agree, yes, I entirely agree. I mean, the whole approach to social problems is now, maybe it'll come back into fashion, but it went out of fashion after about the 1920s or so, didn't it? The idea that you approach poverty looking at an individual family and try and put it right without putting society right first. Mm. But maybe we'll have to come back a bit towards the emphasis on individual casework that Octavia Hill...
Well, I hope it will in social work. Think of poor little boy, Colville. It just indicates the drawback, the bad side, the saddening side of organised social work at present, I think, in many ways.
Yeah. I agree, yeah.
They don't investigate enough and don't cooperate.
Whereas Octavia always mixed freely with poor people. She went into the homes herself.
Yes.
She didn't appoint other people to do it for her.
No.
She believed in personal contact, didn't she?
Completely, yes.
But it's interesting that you admired her. You remember admiring her, do you, as a young... You remember admiring Octavia Hill.
Oh, yes, rather, very much so, always, yes. I think all good, yes, certainly. Very much. And so comforting to feel that she didn't. I mean, with the National Trust. Of course, she did help to start the National Trust.
Yes, she did.
Yes.
And parks, Epping Forest, she got.
A number
of parks, public parks.
Well, obviously, it wasn't sentiment, it was comfort. I mean, no doubt she did it from the highest motives, but also it was common sense. Find out what the needs were, and then get some people, as many as you could, to help. You've always got to have the background in her time of the reluctance of local authorities to do things, to take action themselves beyond what they had got to do as by duties by Act of Parliament. I mean, I don't think you would exaggerate too much the value of some of the really leading pioneer voluntary work in its reaction. Now, of course, it's gone so very much to the local authorities. It's right.
But the volunteers, in a way, pioneer the way that the local authorities subsequently follow.
Quite.
Yes.
I mean, they not always, of course, but the pioneers, the local, good local authorities, of course, were thankful to have something to pick the chestnut out of the fire for them, to raise their unpopularity to begin with.
Were you in that position yourself at all in Oxford, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Somehow we all got so... the war came, I mean... We were all doing. I don't think we the things that before the First World War, they were experiments and so on. There.
In fact, you.
I'm sure they didn't. They all didn't. I was thinking about friendships with the people who the rent collected, that kind of thing, who might have disliked us very much. But they didn't. I mean, we did tell them to criticise if they obviously hadn't washed their floors for weeks and weeks. But also, we were mostly friends there. Not long ago, I was leaving a note at Keble College in the lodge, and the porter, he was the under porter, stopped me as I went out and said, "Aren't you Miss Butler? Do you remember sugar cakes you used to bring us for Christmas? They had chocolate mice upon them." It had remained for 50 years with a feeling of goodwill in his mind, and he begged me to come and have tea with him and his sister in some distant parts of Oxford. I haven't. I only mean that kind of silly little thing. But if the family were a very poor family indeed, very odd in their behaviour, but he had a nice, affectionate mother. They were all very friendly, really. Didn't grudge these little things that went on there.
No, why should they?
And I still meet people up at Rose Hill who were tenants of the Cottage Improvement Society there and who are moved up to very good houses and still quite old, but still fall upon me when I'm up there and say, yes, of course we were glad to get away to these good houses. But we were very happy down there, we really were there. That kind of thing. I mean, that kind of friendship is lost and done quite wholesomely and on a perfectly wholesome basis.
No, I entirely agree. So a lot of the social survey work that you did was visiting people you'd already met on for other purposes.
A good deal, and also that other people had. Dear, our first woman councillor, I forget if I put her name in the preface, Miss Merrill. She was the first woman councillor at Oxford. She handed over a good many people to me. I remember people she was friends with. I think the budgets that I collected laboriously, she said cheerfully, well, I've helped them a lot. I know about pencils and things. I should have told them they might as well do something for you. And they did without turning a hair.
Yes, I wondered where you got those budgets from, actually.
There was no difficulty about them. And when I pointed out that they'd omitted to mention that they bought any bread that week at all, they didn't mind. Ted always said we did forget.
But how was it done? You simply went to Miss Merrivale, did you?
Yes, she was always I think both old friends. She was an old friend of the family too. Yeah.
So you're very well placed in a way, aren't you, for doing a survey, because you know all the key people.
You see, there were a limited number. I mean, Oxford is such a much smaller place, that pyramid. Everybody.
Yes, so you could sort of call out on family loyalties or else loyalties to you as a social worker in getting cooperation in your social survey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's interesting. I wonder if you mention her actually. Let's have a look because I don't remember.
No, I didn't want to make a
yes,
you
do.
Fuss of things at all.
You do, you say Councillor Miss Merrivale.
Oh, it's Councillor Miss Merrivale.
For information or criticism. Mr. Belcham.
Yeah, Miss Merrivale, I remember going round and canvassing. Only time I've ever canvassed in my life. I canvassed for her election as the first woman councillor. And said how very good she was about dustbins. I can't remember why, but she had got a special interest in supplying dustbins. Yeah, and she got in anyway. It was so useful for many years, doing very nice practical things suddenly. She's a daughter of the historian.
Yes.
A picture of my father. It's a social thing, so he hadn't got a great deal more time. He is talking.
Who's he talking to?
Two brothers. His younger brother, Montague, who's most of Trinity. They were walking, they were great friends.
Yes.
They were having a country walk about. On the west coast of Scotland.
Yes.
I snapped them with my 5 shilling brownie. They were talking about the tactics. They were both very good clerics. College work had so more. They were discussing the tactics of the Battle of Waterloo.
Good heavens. But did your father, you haven't mentioned your parents at all in all this?
I didn't want to take them in.
I was really wondering whether they liked the idea of a daughter of theirs.
Well, my father was rather worried about it, but he said he wouldn't. He died before, died several years before the thing was printed. He was rather worried, warned me against being too pushing. But he said I could do it if I wanted to. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
No. Did your mother encourage you as well?
I think she did, but she was, that period too, she was very much occupied with family things. I mean, she was quite very different, but very rather surprised. I was thinking about it as a thought.
But you had no opposition from the family, really, at all, to the idea?
I don't think they very much noticed it. They were all very much interested in other things.
And there must have been a certain pride in your continuing the sort of Edgeworth tradition of being interested in economics and
I suppose so, yes. I don't think I was conscious of it particularly.
But still, you're very lucky coming from a family with traditions like this. I mean, you absorb it almost unconsciously, don't you?
You do absorb it unconsciously, but dear parents, so far as they were concerned, it was social work in the narrow sense, where they just did the immediate things and made no fuss about it, don't you know, and had a great many Oxford friends. My mother visited old people in the workhouse for 50 once a week for 50 years, but made no fuss about it at all.
Mm. So in a way you
just grew up with that, don't you?
You grew up with that.
Quite happy, and made up the bags of sweets and that Christmas, that kind of thing, without any fuss. That's the kind of thing that would be done more by country children, all country, I'm sure all country parsons, all country parsons' children, squires' parsons' children, were doing that kind of thing, just to basically.
Mm. Yes, I can see that it all comes naturally in a way, doesn't it, like that? But one organisation you haven't mentioned at all yet, rather surprisingly in a way, is the Charity Organisation Society.
Oh, yes. Well,
I mean, that's of great importance in your book, isn't it?
Quite. Oh, yes. Brought up to great respect, the COS. I sat up on its committees. Dr. Phillips chaired them with great energy. Warden, Foster Royal, combined, running, being chair of the Board of Guardians and chairman of the voluntary organisation, you see.
But you joined the COS local branch, did you?
Yes.
Soon as you came to Oxford, did you? I mean, after you'd taken your degree, but when you came back from London.
Yes, I think earlier, I think I was on it. I can't remember with all these things. It didn't come to really very much. They had a nice, rather shocked right now, a nice working woman, highly, very carefully selected. I think she was a widow, or a recent widow. Anyway, she acted as their agent. And she did most of the visiting. We did a certain amount of visiting, but families. She had uncommonly good judgment. But told us to be kind to people as they needed, needed kindness, but also could speak with great firmness, the negligent father or mother. Yeah.
Did she help you in your survey? Did she help you in your survey?
I don't remember particularly. Dr. Phelps did, I think, a bit. I can't remember. I asked her questions about things.
Because
she was very sensible.
Because you see, you published, didn't you, parts of it in the Charity Organisation Review?
Did I?
Before you published it, I think, as a book. Yes.
Did I?
At least I think you say that. Yes, I think you say at some points that you did publish parts of it in the review.
Oh, I think I did, yes.
But I can't quite.
It would be in the preface, I think, if at all.
Maybe it is, yes. Let's have a look. Yes, you see, you say, say there, in fact, at the bottom of the preface.
Of these people who helped, I'm going away there, Belgium. He was a very good old schoolmaster, very good and wise of a boys' school over there. Now, long since dead in Rose Lane there. Grant was a cooperative builder. He founded a cooperative building society in Oxford. I remember his coming firmly to us one time and saying I said I didn't want him to paint the windows outside the room, which I taught my earliest pupils. He said, more or less quite firmly, that if I thought at all, I would know that it wasn't right to leave painters underemployed or unemployed because we disliked having our windows painted. There. He was a great theorist, wasn't very much worthwhile. One of the early, yes, people there. Grant, who are these other ones here? Mr. Neve was a very good and wise headmaster also of St. Barnabas School. Very wise and much loved and very sensible. Don't remember Mr. Wurzel. and his secretaries. I've got some notes somewhere of the things they told me.
So you got quite a lot of help from local people?
Somewhere. I was looking for them the other day, but I don't know where they got buried. But I think that they are still somewhere.
Are they?
I did take... of course, I wasn't trained. And being having done this quite untrained, I didn't put references, practically none. They had references quite well. I mean, I got them in my mind, and I think I got them probably. I think they're probably in the manuscript, if it's anywhere there at all. But of course, nowadays, the very placarded was footnotes, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, but I mean, the important thing is the content, isn't it?
That was the kind of thing that the Irish lady next door to me, she wouldn't have read the book if I'd done that.
And she did read it, did she?
I'm not sure that I ever asked her. We went and did head cooking lessons together afterwards, I remember. I think she used to read some of it.
you say, I mean, you include quite a lot of history in the whole thing, as we said earlier. Why, really? Partly to add interest for you and for the Irish lady, but do you think, in fact, that historical investigation is important in social research anyway, or did you think that?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I do think so. I don't know how far back we ought to go. The roots of the first play deep in the past.
Because you went right back to the Middle Ages, didn't you? You went right back to the Middle Ages in your...
Yes, well, of course, ideally one shouldn't, but silly, I think it's quite, yes.
Because you say, I mean, on
page... They're not so very far away now.
No, well, no, I entirely agree. I mean, you say on page 2... In a century which prides itself on the intelligence of its attitude towards social questions, it is both wholesome and stimulating to realise how these have existed in the past and how the predecessors of present administrators have treated them. It is not a matter of merely antiquarian interest to trace the continuity of common effort behind the ordinary life of a town. Well, you clearly believe...
It does sound pedantic, doesn't it? But I believe it quite... I still believe it quite firmly. Because it does sound pedantic there.
No, I don't think so. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, I do believe in history, and I do believe in inheritance. They are all the unfashionable things. Not the history, but inheritance is unfashionable, but I believe in it.
What do you mean when you say you believe in it? You mean...
I believe that people, consciously or unconsciously, hand ideas or standards down to their neighbours, their descendants.
That's quite true. So, however enlightened and progressive they think they are, in fact, they're being unconsciously influenced by...
I think so, yes.
But, yes, even if they repudiate the past, they're unconsciously influenced by it, perhaps. But you see, I mean, in a way, the whole history of social studies, social investigation, has moved away from that, hasn't it? I mean, history is despised, I think, by social investigators as a subject, really, now, isn't it? I mean, the two subjects have gone apart, haven't they?
History
and social studies have gone apart, haven't they?
I know, such a pity. I'm so glad you teach modern history.
But why do you think it's a pity, really? I mean... Because you think that you can't understand the present.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I wonder whether we're getting... I wonder how much Lancashire and Yorkshire, I mean, the descendants of the handloom weavers or the people who were starving. It's not so very long ago. Okay.
No.
Into the 18th century there.
No, I agree.
Or later. I wonder how much consciously or unconsciously they've inherited.
No, I entirely agree. I mean, I regret the divergence between the two subjects, but I think, on the whole, if you look, for instance, you know that book Mogi, do you? By Mogi, called Family and Community, I think, in Oxford.
Yes.
Do you know the book? It has hardly any history in it at all.
Quite. I know. I didn't like that book.
That's interesting. I didn't like it very much either, actually.
I mean, it had some interesting things in it.
Hmm. What didn't you like about it, actually, particularly?
I think unconsciously it was that he didn't care about the past at all.
Mm.
The growth.
Yes, yes. I agree with you. I mean, it's mainly sort of throwing a questionnaire at a number of people and saying that X percent think this or X percent do that and X percent do the other. And somehow it loses a richness and a flavour, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which a historical investigation and a literary investigation has.
Yes. Really.
But so, it's interesting that the two subjects have diverged
yes,
like that,
right.
Isn't it? I mean, it's a pity.
But I hope they hold out hands to each other again. But of course, at the present age of change, one quite sees.
There's the problem of specialisation, of course. You've got so much literature to read, there's a tendency
exactly.
to read.
Yes.
Did you see yourself as a sociologist? What would you have called yourself, really, at this time you were doing the survey? Would you... What did you...
I'm sure I didn't call myself anything.
Yes, yes. I mean... Sorry.
No, nothing at all. I don't think I ever thought about sociology as such much until... the ordinary things about sociology. I got very much interested, that's only about 40 years ago, in Patrick Geddes. I had a good deal to do with Patrick Geddes and his things, his cities. I fell in love with his, his Cities in Evolution book, that book there of his.
Was this before you did your survey?
The survey was further back. No, this was...
Afterwards.
In the 20s and 30s,
Yes, Geddes is quite an important figure, actually.
The group of people that Patty Geddes talked to us about Cities in Evolution. There were a dozen of us. He lived from mountaintop to mountaintop of knowledge. Yeah, quite for 3 hours. I was the only survivor at the end. He would have gone on, only somebody called us the wheel.
That's
he was very inspiriting.
Yes. Did anyone write to you about the survey afterwards, sort of asking your advice, or in doing other surveys, or was it as a model for other surveys?
I don't remember that. But you see, it was the war. I mean, after all, in the years just before we were thinking about the war, or not thinking about the war. I mean, they did. Cut into life, everybody's life, so completely.
Mm. So it was really published at the wrong time. If it had been published in 1906 or in 1920, it would have been a much better period, wouldn't it?
Quite.
Really,
yes.
In some way.
Oh, of course. As I say, it is so obviously, poor little book, it is so obviously immature. I mean, after all, the few comments that I allow myself to make, a few suggestions, or very mild suggestions, I think they were all the sensible, but they weren't the kind, and if my next door neighbour read them, and did do something critical, well, that was all right. But of course it would have attracted much more attention if it had been much more violent and less timid. So that's that.
But what do you think was immature about it, actually? I mean, I didn't feel it was immature when I read it. What do you feel?
I think it would have said that it would have avoided the bits that I feel are class conscious, or else it would have put them in more vigorously, hoping to hit somebody in power.
Yes, I see. You mean you felt insufficiently self-confident to really be forthright, so to speak, either in one way or the other. Is that what you
feel? No, I mean, what I did put in suggestions were quite things I believed in, but I hadn't grown up enough to hit hard. Nowadays, I should have been hitting hard at the age of 20 or 21, shouldn't I, when I wasn't sitting down on the steps of the Clarendon building.
You're very charitable, Miss Butler, about other people, actually. But, you see, what again is puzzling is that you haven't mentioned any source of income while you were doing all this.
No, because, you see, I was supported by my parents. I wasn't anything. I did earn a little money, but not otherwise so to speak, this was the rent that I was paying.
Yes, I mean...
For being supported.
Yes, I understand.
I mean, I began to... But I didn't at all. I taught a few pupils, but not much. I began... I did a little tutorial work somehow about... But not much, otherwise. Somewhere about the beginning, about 1911 or 12.
See, it seems to me a classic illustration of what we've lost through the abolition of private incomes and
yes,
all that.
Yes, quite. I mean, really looking back upon them, and after all, looking back upon them, I mean, I've been watching social workers now, you see, for 6 years or so there, and those, the early social workers, the young ones who were coming on, as I say, all that period, they were a very good period, very good type. Really, they were a good type. They were doing it. They had ideals. I mean, the modern ones have ideals, I'm quite sure. I'm not criticising them, but it's quite a different type of approach now. And it was a very sound approach. And they were quite able people, because they... Now, so many of the ablest women, you don't often find the ablest younger women and men want to go into more better paid and more exciting jobs that even the social services would generally offer.
Mm. But
now, and it's possible for them to do it, but those, so that, I mean, a good many of the people who were like all like the little group of first classes, you see, who started these things in Oxford. Well, the word, I mean, they would be doing something much more exciting nowadays now. Obviously exciting. They might be writing very good books, quite like they probably would be writing good books. Well, instead of writing good books, they felt it was nobody would have wanted their books at that time. But they wanted to do some kind of gratitude for the fact that they were being supported. Well, you said.
You did feel slightly guilty about being supported then, did you?
I think so, yes. Yes, certainly. Being quite.
Because I would have thought that it would be a natural thing for a daughter to be supported in that situation. Well, why should you feel? I mean, I agree now.
We felt that we're not working like other people, like the poorer people. But nobody wanted us, so we preferred to do it unpaid, if we could afford to do it unpaid.
Did you have an idea of a career in front of you at that time?
Yes, but it was very difficult to see. There were so few careers at all that period. I had various ideas which didn't mature, you see. Then I just got into, just before the war, I was asked to be a regular tutor for St. Agnes, you see, there. It was a very small affair so far as I was concerned at that period. And I met dear Dr. Carlyle one day in the Dragon Lane, and he said casually, "We're starting a social studies course at Barnet House, which is just going. Will you look after the women students?" That was my nearest approach to an appointment that I remained for 40 years or so. Well, that was it, yeah. But I mean, they just grew. And of course, there were very few earning appointments for women. I mean, educated to living women, in inverted commas, educated women at that period.
Did you ever feel resentful about that? I mean,
no, I don't think so. I was rather amused, but I mean, I wished for women to have votes, but I was rather amused by Pankhurst and the other 50.
Well, I mean, you see, it would seem to me one of the directions you could have taken would be to be active as a suffragist or a suffragette, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, quite. But I think I was a suffragist, but not at all a suffragette. Not at all.
Did you actually join the NUWSS, the National Union of Women's Suffragists?
I can't remember. I'm not sure that I did. But I knew I should have voted for vote for women. But I was quite satisfied for them to go a bit slow.
What did you think about the suffragettes actually at that time?
I hated people. I mean, I did it quite firmly. I think I should have been much fiercer later on, but I didn't believe you got things by hitting people.
I entirely agree, actually. And I think they did a great deal of harm, actually, the painters,
yes, quite.
Myself. I mean, I'm not... Mm. I think they've got a rather undeserved fame, actually, because the vote did actually follow. It tends to be attributed to them because their activities are so dramatic and exciting. But in fact, I think I think they probably did more harm than good, even to getting the vote, let alone the harm they did in other areas of life. I mean, in many ways, they degraded public manners, I think. To be a bit old-fashioned in my phrasing, I don't know.
It came so quietly, didn't it, after the war?
Yes, yes. But it never occurred to you, anyway, to become active in local suffrage work, because there was a local suffrage society.
No, I don't say I was very much occupied with a great many other things, and I think probably I was stupid in not joining, but I didn't. But I also, I don't say, just lazy to let other people do the work.
No, I'm not.
I was rather doing a number of other things.
No, of course, I'm not suggesting you should. I mean, I don't think one should. But you see, if you take Mary Stocks, for instance, or Kathleen Courtney as examples of women. Well, Mary Stocks is a little younger than you, Kathleen Courtney is a little older. But both of them move naturally from social work and philanthropy, really, into women's work. Often by care committees, you know, the school care committees. But you don't take that direction at all, do you? I mean, you don't move from concern with social work to concern with women's position in society?
No.
Really?
No. No.
I'm not saying you should, I'm just wondering why you didn't.
Rather, quite. No.
And your social work, for instance, for the Women's Industrial Council or the Charity Organisation Society or whatever, must have impressed you with the sufferings of women in all classes, didn't it?
So very much, quite.
But it didn't have the effect of leading you to be active?
Well, not of doing, no, not of forming opinion, helping to form opinion. Of course, we pushed it towards pupils, although not always.
Yes.
Poor thing that, but one did, yeah.
Yes, but clearly there's a limit to how much any one person can do in a person's time. Also, perhaps it's partly because you've got a practical bent to you and you wanted to get specific things done rather than talking in general terms about...
I think rather, yes, I think probably too practical, but that's it.
Yes. Yes. Could I ask you to repeat that thing about Sylvia Pankhurst, since I have it on the tape? That thing about Sylvia Pankhurst, so that it's on the tape, because I'd rather like to have have it, just how what you saw and how it happened.
Yes. It was part of a crowd, by accident, in a crowd down between St. John's and the Martyrs Memorial, there, surrounding... large farm cart it was, a trolley of some kind, but I think it was a farm cart with a speaker, a nice, pleasant-looking speaker, availing quantities of, obviously, mostly undergraduates, so I don't think all. And she was talking brightly and attentively. And at one stage, a quantity of undergraduates seized upon their shafts, attached themselves to the shafts and quite gently and kindly wheeled it away, still talking. Well, I remember seeing it go down to a bowed seat. Yeah. She wasn't hitting, you see, people much. See if there was a gentler one of them. I remember feeling fully approving of her, but not of her mother.
Yes, I quite agree. I mean, Sylvia is rather a heroine now, of course. A lot of people admire her. But of course she later was very active in the labour movement and a communist, in fact, whereas her mother became a conservative candidate, as you know, at Camberwell, I think it was. But that's interesting. But that was the only suffrage sort of event you saw, really, in Oxford, was it? I mean, one...
Oh, there were constant meetings going on. I can't produce anything interesting about them at all, no.
But you weren't involved in them anyway.
No, I mean, I should have quite pleased to join in a meeting, but I wasn't doing anything. No, I wasn't.
Did you join in the pilgrimage, the suffragist pilgrimage in 1913, the one that came from all parts of the country and focused on London? Do you remember they came?
Yes. No, I didn't.
Because they came through Oxford.
Yes, I believe they did. It was Mary Stockton, that was later that she did Bocchies, wasn't it? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary Stocks married the philosophy don at
yes,
St. John's,
didn't yes,
she?
I know, yes,
and she joined in the procession in 1913 yes. in Oxford.
Yes.
Because she told me about it.
Yes.
And yes. she told me about Mrs. Margoliouth in the procession, in the middle of all the excitement and the melee.
Well, see, I'd quite forgotten that.
Trying to introduce somebody to... She said, I do hope you'll come and meet my Persian friend in the middle of all this sort of...
Yeah, that was quite... yeah.
It was a rather splendid moment.
Yes.
But still, you didn't involve yourself in that side of things at all. Did your family have views about women's suffrage? Your mother, for instance. Your father was dead by that time, wasn't he?
Yes.
Did your mother have views about women's suffrage at all?
I don't think she wanted. I don't know. She wasn't against it, but not anxious for it at all. She thought. I think people, her contemporaries, a lot of them just felt like that. And I think, well, they'd better wait a bit longer. Rather longer. Just.
No, it's interesting. I mean, there's so much you can do anyway in other
areas. I mean, there was so much needing to be done there. And of course, one of the reasons, I think perhaps secretly Rome didn't care as much as one might about votes, was that if one cared, one was caring very much about social reform, was that we had, I mean, local government had been leaving so very many gaps in social reform. I mean, one of the objects of suffrage was for women to get to Parliament and to get much more on local authorities, take much more, wasn't it, to take much more part in administration. And administration, as done by public authorities, had been so very poor and left so many gaps. I think that was perhaps one of the reasons why the people who were keen about social service, about getting things done, weren't as keen as they might have been about getting votes. They didn't believe sufficiently in the getting pushing power of all. They ought to have been more, but still, you could put things through. I always preach that to my pupils, that you could put social reform one side or the other side, and you couldn't do them, no one person could do them both simultaneously. Either by trying to get things done on a small scale, or by waiting to get them done on the, to get them done on the large scale.
Yes, I'm sure that's right. The opponents of women's suffrage actually made a lot of the fact that women didn't make the maximum use of their existing opportunities in local government. So why enfranchise them at the national level?
Well, yes, that was quite true. Yes.
If
they hadn't got to this, they would still only rather beginning to do a great deal in local government, weren't they, before the First World War? They were getting in, but not doing a great deal.
They'd had the vote. Municipal vote
yes.
since 1869,
yes.
but the argument was that they didn't use their vote
no.
at the local level, so, you know, how could one expect them to make good use of their vote at the national level, it was argued.
I know. And of course they did wait round in a circle, because the local authorities were being very dull and unimaginative, the smaller ones anyway. Better stay outside and try to get the work done on a small scale. It's not at all.
Well,
the local authorities. Yeah. I remember so well going up to the feeling of the Oxford City Council, you never expected it to do anything, don't you know, very effective there. It was a kind of feeling, so much there, and it was quite a good city council.
Mm.
But the only first public attempt to educate a public authority that I took part in ever was in helping to present a petition to the city council, I mean only on paper there, to stop street feeding or regulate street feeding by children after the first act of the street feeding, which was adopted, wasn't it, there? A.J. Carlyle was very helpful, and Cyril Bailey, and so on. We had a very good set of people who signed the paper. I remember taking it up, giving it to somebody. We were just created to make a speech, and the first thing we had, only news we heard was that it had been, I think Miss Miller or somebody, one of them, did support it at the council, and it was at once agreed, denied, and let it lie upon the table. I think that left a lasting antipathy to the city council in my mind for quite a time. Mm. It changed very much and improved very much, of course.
Yes, you mentioned Miss Merivale helping you with the information on budgets. I don't quite understand how she could do that. How did she have access to this information? What was her position, really?
She was a city councillor, and I think she was on the education committee, and she had dealt with people. She'd done a great deal of volunteer work before she came in. She said she knew a lot of people quite well, and had been friends with them in different ways. She would just ask them if they wanted to apply to her little, all quite informally.
I see, so these were working families, really, who she had contact with.
Working families, yes, quite.
Yes, so she gave you a list or something,
did she?
She
gave me a list. I think she gave me a list, but I think she spoke to them herself. She was seeing them, she said. Hmm. This young lady, she was probably described that way. This young lady may come into me, say, come on, she's quite sensible, pencil, and we just want to do something, something practically useful, something of that kind, probably.
Yes, I see, yes. That's very useful if you can get help like that, isn't it? Yes. Did you think Josephine Butler was at all important as an influence on you?
Sorry, yeah.
Was Josephine Butler at all important as an influence on you as a social worker?
Oh, I think
worker.
So, yes. My mother was very much interested in moral welfare and inverted commas there. I mean, she always had a certain amount. She always has an influence on my... Josephine had a lot of influence on my mother. My mother was a very good mother. My father wasn't very strong in his later years, and she put the family first, but she always had a certain, she helped on, be the managing member on a committee that had a home for unmarried mothers there, and we always had them there. Just when she was reading to us some very nice story in the evening, when we were anything from 10 to 12, that kind of thing there. Somebody would come up, a young woman would, it was what called cake bucket, we always said that the bucket has come, it would come up to be talked to by my mother. But got rid of quite quickly, but she was very much interested, quite, and I always felt, I only met Josephine Butler when she was quite an old lady, rather battered there, but I always felt that even before the I wasn't
really, yes, I wasn't really thinking of the specific interest she had, but the general ideal of rather high-minded social work is something in the family, isn't it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you see yourself sort of continuing that tradition at all, or is that really putting words
not
in your mouth?
Not especially that. I mean, the high-minded social... No, not especially as having inherited it, so to speak, from her, but just, so to speak, felt it was in the air.
Yes, of course, yes.
And I mean, we were all partly socialists without knowing what we were, and all the younger people in their 20s and 30s and their periods, their half the semi socialists. It was a mixture of
social
of
reliance on
yes, of attempts to be good Christians and of common sense and of much with a tinge of unconscious Marxism thrown in.
Yes. I haven't asked you about religion, and obviously as a clergyman's daughter you would have a lot of religion in your background and upbringing and so on. Was that important, do you think, in encouraging you towards this sort of work or not?
I think so. It happened to be the kind that I felt would be rather useful, you see, there, and I felt I had got to.
Yes, it helped provide you with a motive.
Yes.
Was your father, what sort of Christian was he? Was he low churchman or?
Broad, I think he'd have called himself broad churchman. Well, broad churchman at that period.
Oh, yes. Well, Scott Holland, of course, I suppose, would in a way.
They were great friends. But he came away. He was president of the union and things of that kind. And he became, when Harry was reconstituted, he was its first headmaster, quite young, at about sort of 26 or so, worked very hard, writing poetry alongside for 6 years, and then he broke down there and had to stop doing that kind of work for quite a time. Did odds and ends of things. He'd become a clergyman in the interval there, and then he came back to Oriel. He was provost for some time, and then not provost, and then and he was chaplain, that sort of thing there.
I see, yes. And
a very delightful father. There were no talk about fathers.
No, that's interesting. I mean, because presumably you had family prayers and all that sort of thing,
yes.
You, which now
yes, quite
would be rather unfamiliar. Yes. Well, one thing I did mean to ask, and I forgot to ask, if I asked you what major books influenced you.
Oh, goodness.
At that time, I mean, would you specify any of them? You quote Carlyle, for instance, fairly early on in the book.
Well, I never read much of his works at all.
I mean, I'm just trying to remember.
At all, his things came out late. No.
I mean Thomas Carlyle, not A.J. Carlyle.
Oh, Thomas. Oh, yes. Yes.
I wondered if you read anything of his.
Well, of course I read him, but... No. Well, I should have to think a lot about that.
Yes, yeah. I'm just wondering, 191, it was at the top of the chapter, you quote him as, a poor law, any and every poor law, is but a temporary measure, an anodyne, not a remedy.
Yes, that's a very good quotation, isn't it?
It is.
And very sensible of him.
Rich and poor, when once the naked facts of their condition have come into collision, cannot long subsist together on a mere poor law.
Quite. That's it.
I wondered whether Carlyle was one of the books that had impressed you,
Oh, yes, I read him quite a lot, yes. Mm. Yeah.
But, if there were any books that were important, I ought to read them before I meet you again. But you can't think of any special...
Well, not at all, certainly. No.
Well, it doesn't matter. I just wondered if any did occur to you. Anyway, I'll cut myself off.